Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
All right, how are we doing? Okay. Hey, it's crazy week here at Verve. Very exciting. Rob, who usually leads worship, is out of town. Our bass player is on at a family reunion, but band still is great. Good job, guys. Thank you. And we got about eight of our high schoolers are at camp this week with a couple of our adult leaders, which is awesome. They're having a great time. Just got there tonight. So very cool. And today we are continuing our series called The Jesus You Never Knew, where we're trying to get kind of a better picture of who Jesus really is and who he can be in our lives. And tonight we're talking about this great question that Jesus asked. And I'm convinced it's a question that he would ask you and I as well. And so all week I've been thinking about questions, you know, like great questions. What are some of the great questions of all time? Mike shared a bunch of them from Psalms, but what are some of the great questions? And I came up with this list of what I consider to be some of the greatest questions I've ever heard. Do you guys want to hear the top 10 greatest questions? Forget it. Do you guys want to hear the top 10 greatest questions? Come on. All right, here they are, the top 10 greatest questions. Number 10, why do they put Braille dots on the keypad of the drive-up ATM? Seriously, think about it. Number 9, why do we sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game when we're already there? Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Number 8, can deaf parrots read beaks? Things you'd never thought about, have you? Almost gotcha. Number 7, if a cow laughed real hard, would milk come out her nose? I don't know. Number 6, does a fish have to wait 30 minutes to swim after eating? Because that's kind of awkward. Number 5, how come I get funny looks when I go to Panda Express and order panda? Do you guys, no, not you, just me? Yeah, okay. Number 4, if 7-Eleven is open 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, why are there locks on the doors? Yeah, and that's not so good. Okay. Number 3, why don't sheep shrink when it rains? Yeah, exactly. Number 2, if a man, this is Father's Day, happy Father's Day yesterday to you guys, if you're a dad. If a man is standing in the middle of the forest speaking and there is no woman around to hear him, is he still wrong? Yes, okay. We know the answer. And number 1, whose cruel idea was it for the word lisp to have an S in it? Exactly. Good question, huh? All right, there they are, the top 10 greatest questions of all time. Or maybe not. Well, here's the deal. Today, I want to ask you guys a great question, okay? And I'm not talking like, this is kind of a good question. I'm not talking about like on that list. I'm talking about a great question. Like, this is the kind of question, if we had the budget, we would put this question up on the stage in big neon Vegas lights. I mean, it's that good a question. Like, this question is probably the greatest question you've heard in a long time. Maybe the most important question you've heard in your entire life. Seriously. Like, this question and how you answer it tonight, it could literally change the rest of your life. I think it could change the way you view God, the way you view yourself. How you answer this question could change how you talk and how you act and your self-esteem and what you're able to do and not do. Are you getting the idea? This is a really important question. It is. And I want to ask you this question. Have you heard about this question? This really important question. Have you heard about it? Yeah. I want to ask you this question, but first I want to talk to you about a pool. All right? It's a really old pool. In fact, it was a pool from back in Jesus' time, but it's still around today. Like, you could visit it. I've actually been to this pool. It's in Jerusalem, and back in Jesus' time, it was considered kind of this magical pool. Because there was this myth at the time that there would be an angel that would come and it would stir the waters of this pool at certain times. Now, I don't know what the myth was of how the angel stirred the water. Like, Or maybe like you got a big wooden spoon, and I don't know how, splashing around with his hand or foot. I don't really know how the angel stirred the water. But they believed back then that the angel would come and stir the water, and if a person who was sick got into the water at that moment, they would be healed from whatever ails them. That was the myth. All right? And so you know what happens with a myth like that when something like that happens. everyone flocks to it, right? It's like in our culture today, occasionally you'll hear like that a vision of the Virgin Mary appeared in the bark of a tree in Michigan, or like the face of Christ appeared in a tortilla shell in Mexico. And people will flock in the thousands, right, to see this miracle that's happened. And so people back then, they thought this was true, and they flocked to this pool. Sick people flocked to this pool. I mean, thousands upon thousands of people would come hoping to get a healing at this pool. It was a very popular place. Well, of all the people who were there, all these sick and ailing people, the Bible puts the spotlight on one of them. It's this man, and what we learn in the story is that he's been an invalid for 38 years. For 38 years, he's been unable to walk. And every day of those 38 years, he's come down to this pool. He's been brought down there, and he's just laid there hoping to get in, hoping to get in at the right moment. And I guess probably getting a very good tan, you have to believe, after 38 years of laying at this pool. And so we get to kind of find out a little bit about him and eavesdrop on a conversation Jesus has with him in John chapter 5. If you have a Bible, you can turn to John chapter 5. If you don't own an easy-to-read translation of the Bible, we give them out for free. It's not like a trick or a catch or anything like that. If you just stop by the hub table over in the lobby out here and say, give me a Bible, they'll say, here's your Bible. And it'll be like a cool transaction right there. And you're like, what do you charge me? And they'll be like, nothing. And you'll be like, all right, fine, I'm leaving with your Bible. And so you can do that. But if you don't have a Bible with you, we'll put the verses up on the screen for you. So here we go. Ready? John chapter 5, verses 1 through 6. It says this. It says, sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for a feast of the Jews. Now there is in Jerusalem near the sheep gate a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Here a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. One, this is the guy, who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, do you want to get well? We'll pause there. How strange of a question is that to ask a sick man? Isn't that kind of a ridiculous question to ask a sick guy? I imagine that when Jesus asked this guy who's been sick for 38 years, he's laying in the place where sick people go. The guy was probably like, yeah, it had crossed my mind once or twice in the last 38 years. Yeah, I've thought about that. You know, getting well is something I've considered. It's just like an audacious question to ask a sick guy. Right? It would be like tonight, if you left this place, went to the hospital, and just went room to room saying to people, do you want to get well? Do you want to get well? Do you want to get well? People would be like, no, I'm here for the hospital food. Do you want some of my Jell-O? Yes, I want to get well. That's why we come to the hospital. You know, it's a place, it's the get well place. People come here to get well. Or if you went to a restaurant and just went around table to table, hey, do you want some food? Do you want food tonight? Are you here to eat? Yeah, that's what you do at the restaurant. You come to eat, right? And so it seems like a really strange question to ask a sick guy. Do you want to get well? And you have to wonder, you know, why did Jesus ask that guy this question? And I want to think about that tonight. But first, I want to address a different question that you might be asking. Because if I were you, one of the questions that might be swirling in my head is, does it even matter how he answers? Because I mean, can Jesus really make this guy well? Does this question even have any validity to it? You know, does it matter if he says yes or no? Because can Jesus really do anything to make him well? And the answer to that question is yes, he can. In fact, all through the Bible accounts of Jesus' life, we see him making people well. And we've talked about this in here before, but man, you can prove that the Bible stories actually happened. It's not something you just have to accept with blind faith. And these stories really happened. And there are even stories outside of the Bible from Jesus' time about Jesus making people well. Physical stuff, all kinds of stuff. And in fact, it turns out that changing people, helping people, making people well, changing people is something that Jesus is really good at. Changing people is something Jesus is really good at. I heard this preacher years ago, and he had this idea, and I just kind of latched onto it. I really like this idea. He said, can you imagine if there was a salesman back in Jesus' time, like a traveling salesman, And this guy kind of had a sales route that he followed all the time. But let's just imagine that one year, it just so happened by just chance that his sales route followed Jesus' route by like a day or two. Because we see Jesus traveling from town to town and interacting with people and teaching people and making people well. And so let's just pretend that just by chance, this guy just kept following Jesus around coincidentally, and he would always arrive in a town a day or two after Jesus had been there. And this guy, this traveling salesman, he had done this route for years. And so he knew all the people of all these towns, and he knew who was sick and who had problems and what the issues were and all that kind of stuff. And so this one particular year, let's just say he started in the Gerasene country. And the word in the Gerasene country was, if you go there, if you're a traveling salesman kind of guy, you have to get there before dark. And the reason is because to get into that town, you have to go past this graveyard. And there is actually a guy who lived in the graveyard. This guy, he was crazy. He lived with the bones. He howled at the moon. He was naked. He refused to be clothed. And it wasn't just kind of like, oh, he's kind of weird. I mean, it was scary, scary stuff. In fact, it was scary enough that people from the town had occasionally gone, like the guys, and kind of said, let's just be tough about this. And they had chained him up to the graves in this graveyard. But the guy was strong enough, he would end up just ripping the chains off, and he would cut himself with the chains and with rocks. He was bloody. I mean, he was a horrifying kind of guy. And so if you go into the Gerasene country, if you go into one of those towns, you need to go during the daylight because you don't want to be there walking past that graveyard at night. Let's just imagine that this one particular time, this traveling salesman who knew that, he just had a really busy day, things piled up on him, and finally he's like, I got to get to Gerasene country because I got a meeting in the morning. And he's walking there when all of a sudden he realizes, oh no, I didn't. It's past dark, I'm going to have to go past the graveyard. And his brain just starts going, and he's like, what do I do? He's like, I can't turn back, I have to be there in the morning. And so he gets close to the graveyard and he just starts tiptoeing. He's like, maybe he won't hear me. Maybe it's dark enough he won't see me. And like somewhere deep inside in a very quiet place, he's like singing, whenever I feel afraid, I whistle a merry tune. And he's walking, but the strangest thing happened to him as he walked past the graveyard. Nothing happened to him. Nothing. He's walking past the graveyard and he's like, nothing's happening. And he's like, I think I'm home free. But then he realizes there's this one big tomb at the end. And he's like, oh no, the guy's hiding behind that tomb. It's obvious. He's waiting. He's going to get me. I don't know what's going to happen to me. And so he decides just to go for it. And he just starts sprinting. And he is running past this last tomb. And he looks back and no one's there. It's really weird. And so he gets into town. He rents a room. He goes to sleep. Next morning, he meets with his business associate at the Waffle House. And they're eating breakfast together. And he says, before they even start talking business, the traveling salesman says to the business associate, he's like, dude, I don't think he probably said dude back then, but just run with this. He says, dude, the strangest thing happened to me last night. And his friend says, what? And he goes, nothing. What do you mean nothing? He's like, I came in late at past dark, and I walked past the graveyard. Nothing happened. The guy's like, nothing happened. He goes, yeah. And he goes, oh, you mean the guy, the naked guy, the bloody, the crazy guy that lives in the graveyard? He's like, yeah, I was scared to death. Nothing happened. What happened to that guy? And his friend says, do you see that man sitting over there eating waffles? He says, you see that man? And the traveling salesman says, you mean the well-dressed, well-mannered, intelligent-looking man over there? And he says, yeah, that guy. That's the guy. And the traveling salesman says, no, it's not. And he goes, that's the guy. And so he walks over to this guy, and he introduces himself, and he can see, like the chain marks on his arms, and he realizes, that's the guy. And so he comes back over, and he goes, I don't get it. He's been out there for years. What happened? And his friend says, Jesus happened. And you can read the story in Mark chapter 5 in your Bible, but that's what happened. Jesus came, and Jesus made this guy, this crazy man, well. It turns out changing people is something Jesus is really good at. Well, the next town that this guy goes to, this traveling salesman, is the town of Jericho, his least favorite place to go on his route. And the reason is because people don't have spending money there. He never makes any sales there. And the reason for that is that there is this tax collector in Jericho. His name was Zacchaeus. And he was this greedy, immoral man who not only would take your taxes, he would just layer on extra taxes just to pocket the money on his own. And so every time this salesman came into town, people would be like, I would love to buy some of your stuff, but taxes takes all our money, man. We don't have anything to spend. And so this particular year when he's following Jesus, he walks into town and people are running up. They're like, I got some money. I am buying from you this time. And he's like, really? And this lady comes running up and goes, I want to buy something. And he says, what's going on? What happened? And somebody goes, I got a back tax refund. And the lady goes, I got 400% on my refund. And they're all going crazy. And he goes, I don't understand what happened. And they're like, go talk to Zacchaeus if you want to know what happened. Guess what happened? Jesus happened. Jesus happened to Zacchaeus. They met together and they spent time together, and Zacchaeus becomes this generous guy who's giving back money he's stolen from people. It's crazy. But changing people is something Jesus is really good at. Guy goes into the next town, and he gets there and he's like, hey, I'm wondering, that blind guy who's always begging on the side of the road, he's not there. Where is he? And they're like, oh, he works over at the factory now. He works at the factory? And they're like, yeah, he's running the machinery over there. He's like, he can't do that. He's blind. And they're like, no, he's not blind anymore. What do you mean he's not blind anymore? He's not blind. What happened? Jesus happened? He's like, oh, huh. Well, when I was on my way into town, there's that leper colony, and there's like 10 lepers who live out there. The colony was abandoned. Did they die? No, they didn't die. Where are they? They went home. They can't go. You guys don't understand. They can't go home. If they go home, they'll give their families leprosy. No, don't worry about it. They don't have leprosy anymore. What do you mean they don't have leprosy anymore? You can't lose leprosy. And they're like, no, they did. What happened? Jesus happened. Town after town, everywhere he goes, just all these people are changed. And the common denominator in all the stories is Jesus, because changing people is something Jesus, he's really good at. And it's not just like physical stuff and problems. It's other stuff too. It's like personality stuff. Like Jesus chooses these 12 guys to be like his apprentices, his disciples. And man, these guys, you read the stories about them, they are like dumb and dumber and dumber and dumber and dumber. I mean, they are a mess. Like, for instance, two of them are these brothers named James and John. And James and John have a nickname in their town. They are called the Sons of Thunder. Not the Thunder Down Under. That's totally different. don't think that. But they're the Sons of Thunder. And you know, you don't get a nickname like the Sons of Thunder by being like president of the Ladies' Tea Society, right? You don't get it by volunteering at the library, right? When you get the nickname Sons of Thunder, like, you are tough guys. Like, these are guys, like, they were like Harley riders, you know. They probably had like leather, you know, robes, I guess, with like Sons of Thunder on the back. And, you know, they would come riding into town on their camels with racing stripes. Get your camels running. Head out on the highway. It's not worth a laugh, you're right. I admit it. But and these are like tough, tough guys. In fact, check this out. So, like, they become Jesus' like apprentices. He takes them from town to town. He teaches them and how to, you know, do life and how to minister to people. And there's this one town that just does not receive Jesus. They're like, we're not interested. We don't want you here. Go to the next town. Leave us. And so James and John, the Sons of Thunder, they go up to Jesus and they're like, hey, we know what to do. You got power and stuff. We want you to do. You know what? We can do this. Let's call down lightning and burn up the town. No, Jesus, we're serious. Right now, burn the thing up. It's like, seriously, guys, you've been with Jesus. Have you seen him burning? You know, but they don't get it. These are just tough, mean guys. But they hang out with Jesus for a couple years, and they start kind of going through change. They're changing. And John stops calling himself the Son of Thunder, and he starts calling himself by, he has this nickname for himself. He calls himself the one Jesus loved. And then later, John writes a letter, and it's actually in our Bible. It's a book called 1 John in the Bible, if you want to look at it later. And the theme of 1 John is love. More than any other book in the Bible, John writes, God is love. live in love. Love one another. Love. And it's like, what happened to the son of thunder? Well, I'm sure he was still a tough guy, but he had become a man, a teacher of love. He got changed because changing people is something Jesus is really good at. And so with all those people that Jesus was able to change, I'm thinking a guy laying for 38 years even by a pool is a piece of cake, right? He can do it. So if you have the question, is this a question of any validity? The answer is, yeah, Jesus can do something about it. Which brings us back to the original question, why did he ask? Right? Why ask the sick guy, do you want to get well? It just seems like a really odd question to me. And I don't know the answer, but I have a theory. My theory is this. It said that Jesus learned that the man had been there for 38 years. Okay, so here's my theory. You don't have to agree with me. And it's not like a universally true theory, even if I'm right. It's a sometimes theory. But my theory is this. If you're not well, and you keep going to the place where people get well, but you're not getting well, there's at least a chance that maybe you don't really want to get well. Maybe this guy didn't really want to get well. It's possible. And so Jesus, maybe, that's why Jesus asked him this question, do you want to get well? And you'd think if he does, he'd say, yes, that's why I'm here, right? Duh, of course. Well, let's look at his answer. So Jesus says, do you want to get well? In verse 7, right? We see, he said that. And then let's look at verses 7 and 8. Sir, the invalid replied, I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me. And so what he does is he starts with making a bunch of excuses. He didn't say yes. I would think he'd go, yeah, I want to get well. But instead he makes excuses. He says, I have no one. Do you think he's telling the truth? I don't know, but I doubt it. I think he probably has someone. Like, think about it. The guy can't walk, and yet he's gotten down to the pool every day for 38 years. Someone brought him to the pool, right? And I'm imagining someone must have fed him those 38 years. Someone probably clothed him for those 38 years. Someone probably bathed him for those 38 years. I think he probably had someone, but he says, I have no one. And it just kind of convinces me that maybe I'm right. Maybe this guy, whether he realized it or not, maybe he thought he wanted to get well, but maybe he didn't really want to get well. Maybe this is one of those times where being sick is not bad. And maybe it's a time where you just kind of get used to being sick. And there's some advantages to being sick, right? Like there's no responsibilities. You don't have to worry about that. And just like kind of life is a little bit easier. I don't know about you, but I can think of some times where I didn't mind being sick so much. You? Like when I was a little kid, and I would say to my mom, like when I was real little, I'd be like, Mama, I don't feel good, Mama. Do I have to go to school? Oh, honey, no. If you don't feel good, you don't have to go to school. Oh, okay. Can I watch TV? Yes, sweetie, you can watch TV. Oh, could you change the channel for me? Because when I was real little, no remote controls. Shows a little bit how old I am if you're trying to figure that out. And she'd say, of course I'll change the channel for you. Okay. Mama, can you give me some 7-Up? We don't have any 7-Up, honey, but I'll go to the store and get you some. Okay, could you get me some ice cream, too? Right, it's not that bad being sick sometimes, is it? You know, it's not bad at all. Because then when you get better, what happens? Mama, do I have to go to school today? Yes, you have to go to school. Oh. Mama, can you change the channel for me? You can get up and change the channel for yourself. Mama, can I have some 7-Up? We don't have any 7-Up. Could you go to the store and get me some? Are you kidding me? Are you for real, right? Sometimes it's not that bad to be sick. And maybe this guy had gotten into the situation where he was just pretty happy being sick. Maybe. I don't know, but I have a question I want to ask you. Have you heard about this question? Have you heard about it? It's like a really good question. Like, this is a great question. Like, this is an incredibly important question. And maybe you need to hear it. Like this guy, what I'm thinking is, I think he had gotten to a place where he was just so used to being sick, he was fine with it. And what he needed was to be challenged. He needed somebody to look him in the face and say, do you really want to get well? Maybe you and I need that. Maybe we need a challenge. So here's the question. Do you want to get well? Do you want to get well? Or we could put it another way. Are you willing to change? Are you willing to change? Do you want to get well? Now, don't everyone answer at once. Right? Because, I mean, let's just be honest. I don't know what you think, but from my experience, I would say for a lot of people, the last thing they want is to get well. For a lot of people, if they're just being totally honest, the last thing they want to get is well. I mean, with a lot of people, man, you even just like suggest them making like superficial little changes that it's obvious they need to make, and they push back and they get defensive and wait a second, and it's like, okay, you don't even want to change little things. You certainly don't want to really get well. But do you want to get well? Do you want to get well? Are you willing to change? And seriously, don't answer yet. Because one thing I think you need to realize is if you say yes, I want to get well, that's an invitation to God. Right? That's an invitation to Jesus to come in and to help you make those changes that you need to make. Because change feels something Jesus, he's really good at. And he will come in and he'll start messing in your life. Right? You say yes, Jesus starts messing in your life. And here's the deal. I don't think he'll come in and start messing with the little stuff that you can handle. The stuff that, you know, you could change if you want to. Now, I think what Jesus probably will do is start coming in and messing with the big things that you can't handle. Like, let's say that there is this sin in your life. All right? Let's just say that you have a horrible temper. That's you. You have a horrible temper. You've had it like your whole life. I mean, people tell stories about when you were a baby. Oh, you should have seen you. You were a handful, right? And everybody laughs about it now. But you've had this temper your whole life. And it's just kind of, it's almost become like who you are. I mean, if you talked about who you are, that'd be one of the things. I just had this horrible temper. Always had it, right? I think that Jesus would say to you, that's it. That's your mat. Pick it up and walk, right? We're going to get well, and so you need to get well. Let's do this. And you might say, wait a second. I didn't realize where, I mean, that's just kind of who I am. I mean, I've always been that way. I want to get well, but I don't know about that because I mean, honestly, I can't imagine myself without that. That just kind of defines who I am a little bit. I don't know about that. And Jesus would say, No, that's the thing. That's the thing. Do you want to get well? Or let's say that maybe your problem is that you have been hurt in life. I don't know how. Maybe you were abused. Or maybe you had this relationship that went bad and you got wounded. And it's not your fault. It's somebody else's fault. And you can't, it's not, you know, you're not responsible for what they did to you, but you are responsible for how you handle that. And maybe you've been wounded for a long time, and maybe Jesus would come to you and he would say, that's the thing. I mean, that's the thing that we're going to work on. And you might say, I've tried already. I've tried to forgive. I tried to move on. I just can't. I can't change. And maybe if you were really honest, you'd say, I'm not completely sure I want to. Because who I am in life is I'm a victim. I'm a victim. That's my identity now. And Jesus would say, no. No, that's the thing. That's the thing. That's where we want to make you well. Or maybe your problem is a habit that you've got into. Maybe your habit has become an addiction. Like maybe it's alcohol. All right? And so maybe you've developed this problem with alcohol. And Jesus would say, that's the thing. That's what we're going to make well. And you might go, oh, okay. When I said I wanted to get well, I didn't realize that's what we might be talking about. I mean, I don't need that, but I could quit if I wanted to. But I mean, that's something I really enjoy, and I spend time with my friends, and it just kind of relaxes me. And so, I mean, let's work on something else together, Jesus, because I'm not. I mean, I could quit if I want to, but I don't know if I want to. So we'll just work on something else, and Jesus would go, no, that's the thing. Let's get well. Now, I don't know. I don't know what it might be for you. But there's something. and Jesus wants to make it well. And I realize that a lot of us have just stopped trying. You might sit here and go, you don't understand. It's not that I don't want to get well. I have tried and tried, and I just reached a point where I've just given up. I have just given up. No, don't give up. No, you have no idea. Seriously, you have no idea how close you might be to victory. You have no idea how close you might be to healing. And this guy had gone to that pool for 38 years. And he could have just said, why go again today? Nothing's going to happen. He had no idea he was going to meet Jesus on that day. You have no idea, so don't give up. And maybe you've tried a lot of things. Maybe you feel like you've tried everything. But maybe you've never said to Jesus, yes, I want to get well. Maybe he's the one thing that you've never tried. And so don't give up. All right, so let's see what happens in the story. It starts out with Jesus saying, do you want to get well? The guy does not say yes, right? He makes excuses. No one's here to help me to get into the pool, which I don't know about you, but sounds so much like me and almost every person I know, right? Because when we start thinking about the areas that we're not well, we just make excuses. You don't understand. I mean, it's not my fault. It's what my parents taught me. You don't understand. I mean, I would quit drinking, but my husband, he's so hard to live with. You don't understand. I mean, I would be a nicer driver, but the other people are morons. Have you driven around here? You don't understand. I've always been this way. I can't change now. You don't understand. I mean, yeah, I know I have a temper, but I mean, people are so frustrated. You don't understand. I would do better at work and I would care more about my job, but they don't care. I mean, I can go and just do whatever I want. No one cares. Why should I care? Right? We're filled with excuses just like this guy. So let's find out what happens next. Chapter 5, verse 8. It says, then Jesus said to him, get up, pick up your mat, and walk. Now, from this man's perspective, what's the problem here? These are the very three things he can't do, right? The three things he cannot do are he can't get up, he can't pick up his mat, and he can't walk. From his perspective, there are no three more difficult things that Jesus could have asked him to do. Jesus could have said anything. Say the alphabet forwards and then backwards really fast. He would have a better chance of doing that than getting up or picking up his mat or walking. This is the very thing he can't do. And he has to think, what are you kidding me? Do you see where I am? Do you understand my situation? And he's already made these excuses. But look what happens next. Chapter 5, verse 9. It says, at once, the man was cured. He picked up his mat and walked. And this guy did something very right, didn't he? You know what he did? In faith, he obeyed what Jesus asked him to do. In faith, he obeyed. And it was exactly the right thing to do. I mean, this guy, he had to have 1,000 thoughts going through his mind. What do you mean, get up, pick up my mat? Are you making fun of me? This is the thing, I mean, all these thoughts, right? And everything inside of him must have screamed, you can't get up. You can't pick up your mat. You can't walk. But even with all those distractions, even with all those thoughts, even with his excuses, one thought that must have gone through his head of the hundreds, the thousands, I don't know how many thoughts, right? One thought must have been, you know what? You've been laying here for 38 years. You've tried everything. Nothing has worked. Maybe it's worth giving this guy a try. It must have been one of the thoughts that went through his head. And somehow he grabbed that thought. And he said, this seems crazy, and I don't think I have any hope, but I'm going to try to get up and pick up my mat and walk. And listen, I realize that this is not easy. I understand that totally. But this is exactly what you and I are going to have to do if we're going to get well. Right? We've got all our excuses. We've got all these thoughts. We've got this voice in our head that says, I can't. I mean, that's the one thing I've proven in my life that I cannot do is stop doing that. The one thing I've proven in my life that I can't do is start doing that. I can't change. But we need to find that one thought that one faith thought that says, I've tried everything and here I still am today. Maybe Jesus is worth giving a try. And grab onto that thought and in faith obey what it is that God is asking us to do. I wonder what God's asking you to do to get well. I wonder, here's my guess. I don't know. Here's my guess. My guess is you know. It's not that you don't know what to do to get well. It's not like you don't know what the path is. The problem is that you're just not doing it. Right? You probably know what it is. You're just not obeying what you know God would have you do. And so what is it for you? I don't know. Maybe for you, maybe it's finding a trusted friend and getting some accountability and saying, I need help. I need you to ask me some tough questions. I need you to check in on me. I don't know. Maybe for you it's going to an AA meeting. Maybe it's going for counseling. Maybe it's making a big decision. Maybe it's getting baptized and giving your life to Christ fully. I don't know what it is for you. My guess is probably you know. And what you need to do is just act on that. As difficult as that may seem, as impossible as it may seem to you to do it, it's not more impossible than a guy who's been laying paralyzed for 38 years, getting up, picking up his mat, and going home. Listen, changing people is something that Jesus is really, really good at. But first, you have to answer this question. Have you heard about it? It's a big question, man. It's important. Like if we had the budget, we would have put it up here in like bright, flashing, neon Vegas lights to make sure you didn't forget it. And this question, like seriously, it's probably the most important question you've heard in a long time, maybe in your life. This question and how you answer it could change the rest of your life. It could change how you view God and how you view yourself. It could change what you do and don't do. It could change how you think and how you act and how you treat people in your relationships. It could change the course of your life. Have you heard about this question? Do you want to get well? Do you want to get well? Let's pray. God, I just thank you for Jesus. That he came down as God in human flesh with all the power of God. And he went from town to town and he changed people who are willing to be changed. God, I thank you that you're still in the business of changing people. God, my prayer for my life and for the people in this life, in this room's lives, is that Jesus happened. That people would look at our lives today and they'd look at our lives a month, a year, 10 years from now, and they would say, what happened? And we could honestly say, oh, Jesus happened. And God, so maybe what we needed tonight was just to be challenged with this question, which seems so silly and not needed to be asked, but maybe we need to be asked, do you want to get well in this area of your sickness, in this area where I struggle, in this area that I think I can't be changed, am I really willing to get well? God, thanks for the question, and thanks for the offer of healing and transformation and change. Thank you that changing people is something Jesus is really good at. And I pray, God, that you give us the courage to act in faith and obey what it is that you're asking us to do. And we pray all these things in Jesus' name. Amen.